Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hi, everyone. This is Marcin Lewandowski, and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. Today, I'm with Andreas Idel, CEO and co-founder of Cropster, the invisible software powering specialty coffees rice. From a spark in South America to a platform trusted by world champions, Cropster turns craft into data-driven consistency. They just acquired Firescope, and they are not done. Andreas, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here. Really lovely.
Amazing. So Andreas, I know that you are on holiday right now, so we're gonna. I hope this is gonna be still a nice conversation for you. So even though you're already entertained in your swimming pool and stuff, this is gonna be even a valuable addition to it. And I would like to start this conversation from, you know, just asking you, who is Andreas? For those who don't know you, maybe you can tell us more about yourself and what is Cropster. You know, how did you actually get started?
So yeah, I'm originally a computer scientist or an engineer. Mm-hmm. I changed from being a chemist before. I was driven about, you know, chemistry is very interesting, but I was driven about that I can take a computer and I just can do stuff. And I realized about the power that very easily you can bring ideas to something real and change something real in the world. And that captivated me, and that drove me since university then to this point to starting companies. I also started an NGO on the side, very simple one, but I always try to found things, to drive them forward, make them real, and change something that's valuable and the right thing. And that was also a big motivation behind doing Cropster. When we started out, we were three Austrians. And by different circumstances, we landed up in Colombia in an international research organization called CIAT. And that's something that's really a hidden structure, actually, most people don't know about. We have about nine of these international research centers in the world.
Yeah.
And they are responsible to research all the staple foods that we consume, like rice and wheat and corn and potatoes and sorghum and stuff like that. And they are literally only here to secure food for all the people in the world. They are non-profit, and that's basically the goal. And these organizations exist now more than 50 years, and to do continuous science around that. Also around today, a big question is, how do we make the stuff that we eat and the plants that grow around us climate resistant, right? How do we secure food for the future? That's what drew me a lot, and we got to know each other in Colombia, and we got into coffee, which is a very big part of the GDP in Colombia, a very big export good. And coffee was so interesting. It's an industry that's very nice. I don't know how to say it better, but most people stay in coffee because they like coffee.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of passion in the product. Most people, also on the consuming side, coffee is something nice. Sometimes it's functional. I get that. Sometimes you need a coffee, right? But it's a nice thing. You know, it's also healthy, yeah. But it's pleasurable, right? You meet for a coffee. You take a coffee break. It's not a cigarette break. It's a coffee break. It's very nice, right?
Yeah.
And it smells to you, and it's a lot of... it's a passionate product. And obviously, I knew coffee growing up in Europe. But then I was in Colombia, and I've seen that this industry is very, very old, like very low tech. It's extremely fragmented. And with the work in coffee, I started to realize it's not just in developing countries where we grow the coffee, but it's also on the roaster side and the coffee shop side. It's an incredibly fragmented industry. It's global, but it's mostly consisting of small and medium enterprises. And that's very interesting because most foods in the world are actually just the opposite of that. There is very little fragmentation in cacao, for example.
Yeah.
But the point was, what we realized that this small structure, small and medium enterprises created a huge variety of different coffee styles in the world, and it's very fascinating to explore that. But it also means they were very under-tooled. They had very little systems. By being an SME, they're also less productive than big companies. And that was all pressing on the industry, basically. It was a very unproductive setup. And that's why we thought, whoa, if we start to build platform and tools that help these companies to increase or make better what they're doing, exchange information to overcome basically that that fragmentation in the supply chain, we can really drive the needle in the right direction, and we can make a whole industry arm basically more productive over time. And that was essentially the motivation why we started out in Colombia in a nice house in Cali. Let's do Cropster. We bought a domain, and then we started out.
Amazing. I love the story. I love the story, and I love how it all started in Colombia. And I love that, like, you were all like free Austrians, and that, you know, like the fact also that you went for coffee, not anything else, because in Colombia, right? That was your main idea. So, Andreas, I know that that Cropster, you know, like you kind of specialize in specialty coffee. So I was wondering more like what is specialty coffee, and like why is the world excited about it?
Huh. Yeah, I can only fail on that. So I think so specialty coffee, I think it's a raw term, and you can think about it that the coffee, I would say, tastes nice or better than an average cup, and that it was made skillfully. And I know that's very vague. Let me give you an example that basically shines better. Coffee, and most people don't know, coffee is chemically the most complex food item we consume in terms of flavors. It has four times more flavors than wine. Now, let's go to the supermarket in most countries, buy a coffee, and do you really get that variety of flavor? And that's a bit the sad story, but the reality is coffee has such a potential to surprise you, and I mean that's going from jasmine flavors to sour candy and whatnot, and that's all in the fruit. We can do that. And bringing out that specific flavor is a big driver behind specialty coffee to taste that variety and develop that out. And that you as a consumer, you can basically go and learn about coffee, and it's a journey that does not end. And that's a big promise I make here to the world. When you start with specialty coffee, it will never get boring.
Nice. I like this line. That's better, because you start like this a bit vague. Now I feel it. I feel the specialty coffee. And you said, and also what you said about generally coffee, like to be one of the most complex like items in terms of food that we are consuming. So kind of going after that scoop, like what's the basic process for producing specialty coffee? Like from, you know, cherry to cup, and like where is quality usually, you know, won or lost during that process?
Yeah, there is a phrase a friend of mine say that you can only preserve quality. That's the best you can do. I'm not as pessimistic, but really, so coffee grows on the bush. And coffee grows in cherries. You said that already. A cherry is the size of a cherry we grow in Europe, for example. And each cherry has two beans, and they are facing each other on the flat side of a coffee bean. So you can think about how many cherries you have to pick to get a cup of coffee. But so you take that out, and then the main process is it branches out already. And here the variety and fragmentation starts already. So either you leave it in the cherry and you dry the whole thing, and then you peel it, you put it in a bag, transfer it to the place where it's roasted. There you roast it and blend it with other coffees and you brew it. And the other branch is you take it out of the cherry, you wash it or everything off, and then you dry that. And then you export and roast. There is a lot of mixed processing here, but the point is when we pick the cherry, it will start ferment and the drying stops the fermentation. Roasting does a lot of chemical things that you also know when you bake bread or when you fry something that turns brown. Then we call that the Maillard. And then we have the brewing itself, which is doing also a chemical process. If you think about what kind of foods that you consume and that have a non-flat flavor or great flavor, that may be a bread crust, that may be all the alcohols that we have, all the teas that we have, kombuchas, and all of them are either have a huge part in fermentation or they have a Maillard reaction or both in it. Literally, very little products exist that have it out of the box. And coffee has both in a very, very rich way on this very complex chemistry, and that creates all that flavor. So coming back to your question, so many people touch the coffee through the supply chain and make it happen. There is not one way to make it great. The ideal scenario is to harvest the coffee, understand what it is, and process it in the best way to preserve its unique terroir and its unique flavor.
Amazing, Andreas. I could actually hear to you telling me about the process of for producing specialty coffee for hours. It's very nice to hear. I can hear your passion, feel your passion coming from it. When you first, maybe let's talk about, like smaller holders and emerging roasters for that. So when you first met those, you know, small holders and emerging roasters, what frictions kept them, you know, out of the premium market?
It was basically all friction. It's unbelievable. But there were a few really motivated guys and girls who really wanted to move the needle. And the situation was this. Coffee was traded as a commodity around the world. So filling containers, ships, and forward contracts you can trade on the stock exchange. And that doesn't really fit for a product with so much variety. You know, it doesn't have just one description. It has a lot of descriptions, and it's special and it's expensive or more expensive than commodities. And so basically the roasters and producers on each side, they lost the knowledge on how to trade more special products. They didn't have the tools, so no software, partially not even machinery to do it nice. Everything was optimized commodity, volume. And then that change had to happen. And that's exactly when we were in Colombia, basically. We've seen the change is required, and the change is what only real measure we understood to deliver more money to the farmers. And we talk about 3 to 4 times more than a fair trade at the time. It was a really, really big change. But if you pay so much more for the product, you want to roast it nice without defect so you can actually sell it and bring it to a consumer who's willing to pay for that.
100%.
And if you cannot do that, it's so hard. It's running against walls. And that's when we came in and tried to solve the problems.
Exactly. So what does Cropster provide, you know, like, and what, you know, shows up on a screen that changes, you know, tomorrow's roast?
So yesterday, what we really came out with, we showed what's happening in a roast machine on a real time base. So how the temperatures develop and stuff like that. And then we developed an analysis that we took today called rate of rise. It's a very nerdy topic, but it tells you how fast you're raising or not raising. And that's very important in coffee. And these functionalities, we could suddenly see visually in real time if you're having a defect or not. Before that, people thought it's a thing. It's nature, right? Defects happen. But now we could visualize it, and then suddenly we could develop strategies on how to prevent that. Now we are a step further. We have automations, we have AI prediction into the future, and we can apply that. So we can even see if a mistake would happen in 2 minutes from now, and we can figure out a way to prevent that from happening. That things that changes a lot.
Yeah, in terms of like everything, also in terms of waste, right? And
waste is an outcome, right? Waste is happens when you don't deliver what you need to do.
Exactly.
And that was a big thing in coffee. Yeah, absolutely.
Andreas, World Coffee Roasting Champions use Cropster. That was like a long line. World
most
coffee
of them,
roasting.
Yes.
Nice.
That's how you get it, actually. Yeah.
Awesome. What are they doing differently, you know, and like what can any roaster copy on Monday?
Yeah, I mean, first they use Cropster, right? So you can have that on Monday. I promise we will set it up till next Monday. All good. No problem. I know a few also personally, and I know people who won. It is a lot of dedication. You want to, you know, it doesn't happen by chance. Most of them are very data-driven, so they iteratively improve over time, and that's how also they use Cropster. It's not just having the real-time support, but really they use the data and report and learn over time for marginal gains at the end of the day to be better and better. And better means better quality, very high consistently. If you're not consistent, you have no quality and you have a waste. And these are people who do it. You might know James Hoffman from YouTube.
Yeah,
it's a coffee coffee channel. He's one of the former world barista world champions. He has a roastery, Square My Coffee. It's one of our first customers in Europe, and they take that very seriously. The whole company is very, very focused on delivering high value coffee to the customers, and they do it again and again. You can just go on the website, order a coffee, it will be nice. And I know how hard that is.
It's amazing. Andreas, when you were telling me all those things, I was just having in mind like the tour that I recently had with my wife and kid in a vineyard that we went to, and how vineyards, like generally how they operate and how everything is done, how much it changed and how much we had to adapt given the changing climate. And is there like, can you have a similar experience when it comes to coffee? Like, I mean, in a way that can you go and like see the process of coffee making, see like where it happens, and like do people organize something like that?
Yes. In most cities, some roasters offer visit to days, or you can also then taste different coffees and see the variety that exists. The difference to the vineyard effectually is the coffee might have grown one in Honduras, one in Kenya, and one in Ethiopia. That's then in the roastery, for example, in Berlin, that you can taste. So, and that also adds to the complexity, right? We need the platform above connecting these points. Otherwise, you don't get it. In a vineyard, it's next to you, the farm. You can go there anytime.
Right.
But it's possible. Many roasters call that public or open cupping. Cupping is the term we use for tasting coffees because it's in a cup. And that's a good start to dig in, I would say.
Also, like how much coffee, like you shouldn't be tasting too much coffee. No, it's not good. Like how much coffee?
There is no limit. No, there is no such thing as good, enough coffee, too much coffee, I think.
Nice. But what's your heart going to tell you about it? Will the heart agree and your BP?
Absolutely. No. I'm not so sure about, so when you take too much caffeine on a professional level, because you taste so many coffees, most people drink a downer after that.
Okay.
That's roughly how it works. You can have too much caffeine, but I think the levels of too much caffeine, it's very high.
Okay.
And I think we overstate that a bit, generally. Overall, no, I have to also say...
Andreas, how much coffee?
Six cups.
Okay.
I could relocate to Finland, actually, I think. That's where the highest per capita consumption is. No, I think we did a lot of more research on coffee in the last years. And the nice thing, so it's relatively safe, what I mean with that. It's relatively healthy. It's not unhealthy, mm-hmm. at least. Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you think about, you know, when you drink coffee, it's like a full drink, right? It doesn't taste empty.
Yeah.
And if you compare it to any other drink that you consume that has full body, yeah. It's either alcohol or sugar.
Right.
And that's a very huge growth market right now. In coffee, we call it cold brews or ready to drink in a bottle. You buy it mm-hmm. in the supermarket. It's in a can or a bottle. This is growing insanely. A customer of ours has, in the US, they doubled their production in 3 years just because of that yeah. trend. And this trend eats into soft drinks.
Yeah.
There's no reason to drink a Coke versus a cold brew coffee. I would always take cold brew coffee. It's more healthy and it's nice.
I think there's one specifically that I know. It's called Stoke. Do you know this one?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe I should.
No, you should. I don't know if you're into football or like generally into good cinema. Everyone is into good cinema. Like there is this documentary called Welcome to Wrexham, and it's produced by Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, mm-hmm. Because they bought like second oldest football club in the history in the world, and it's Wales, and it's in Wrexham, in Wales. And one of the sponsors of the club is the coffee, the cold brew coffee, Stoke, and they had this advertised during the show where like they like brought Channing Tatum from the US, and then like the whole team of Wrexham and him were like doing like a magic mic kind of dance, but doesn't matter. Like probably I went too off the topic, but it's very interesting.
No, but it's true, right? It's a healthy product that you can consume most of the day. It's nice.
Yeah, exactly. I'll send you the link after for that to that
Thanks.
Coffee particular one. You should check it out. Anyways, mm-hmm. getting back to our conversation here. Why have you I wanted to talk about Firescope and like your recent mm-hmm. Acquisition. Why have you acquired Firescope? And like what pain disappears for roasters and cafes?
Mm-hmm. I think we talked a lot about coffee and very little about the market. That's my bad.
Right.
I need to bring that in here a bit. Although coffee is very fragmented, it's also in Asia a lot. And sometimes mm-hmm. we don't see that in Europe, but Asia is the strongest growth market in coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a few countries which are today heavy coffee drinkers, that's Korea and that's Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very long coffee history in the meantime, so many decades long.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, we see growth in China, Taiwan, and Southeast Asia. Indonesia is a big coffee consumption country too.
Mm-hmm.
And these are one of the biggest countries in the world. And suddenly they drink more and more coffees, usually in cities.
How is India?
India is starting right now. It's insane, actually. We didn't see that coming, but we have just connected a very, very big coffee chain across India. We're setting up all their coffee shops for better brew control in all the cities.
Nice.
It's insane. The growth rate is insane.
Amazing. I'm asking because my wife is from India, so like the whole family lives in India. So and she loves coffee. So I was, and they all drink coffee. So I was just interested because you didn't name India in all those countries that you were mentioning. So like,
no, that's true. But India is very, very new to the game. Japan is in it like 7 decades, right?
right.
But the point is the growth is strong. The cities drink coffee. More middle class means more coffee. Consumption And we see that a lot. We see that customers coming to Cropster, but Firescope is a Korean company, and they focused on small, on some very small roasters that we typically don't have in Europe, because your coffee production or your productive, a professional journey in coffee starts a bit smaller than in Europe. That has a few reasons for that, but typically it's smaller, and we never really made a product for that size. And Firescope has one for that size. And what we do now, we bring Firescope and our roast product together. So Firescope becomes the smallest tool, and we grow from there into the crops of portfolio over time. And what we gain about that, we get now a nice office in Seoul. We get another 3,000 customers into our customer rooster, basically. And we are in the market where it currently happens. And we have a more complete portfolio. And that's very nice going forward. And we look to grow that from East Asia and Southeast Asia.
Nice. Andreas, is there deep sky back? What's happening there?
I think, no, it's a bus go. It's forward now. It's gone. Okay. Sorry. Sorry. sorry for that.
No worries. It's fun. It's a part of the podcast. Andreas, so because you mentioned all those markets, all those people involved, and like huge numbers, and so this kind of led me to like another point that I had of discussion that I want to mention here. Like, I know that you are a lot also about fair access. So I was wondering, how does your data, you know, help farmers and roasters earn better pricing and longer relationships?
Absolutely true. It's not what I believe. It's my motivation. When we do Cropster, we want to do it right. It's fluffy, but what, you know, when you make a tool, you have several use of a tool, and we need to make it in the right way. That's the motivation. When we provide service, we want to do it in the right way. Okay, so how does it concretely help? We already covered the topic that a roaster with less waste is more productive. Yes. That helps them to look at more productive things in the same time. Less money lost as well. With our roasting tool, over time, we were able to make roasting times shorter. So instead of 60 minutes, we are now more closer to 30 minutes, for example. That saves a lot of gas. It also saves you time throughout the day. You can roast a batch more in the same time. But you see accumulating effects, basically less waste, less CO2 or less gas use. That helps it to be on the right side, on the productivity and on the ecological side or sustainability. On the farmer side, it looks a bit different. We help farmers or farmer communities. It's usually cooperatives. When all the harvests come in, they need to categorize them well. That means tasting and analyzing coffees. We have the tools for that. Because a roaster in Japan will buy a very different coffee than a roaster in Norway. Because culturally, they value different flavors in coffee, and they would pay a premium for one flavor, or it might even be bad. So they would actually not even buy the coffee if it has a specific flavor that the other likes.
Right.
So you, as a Colombian farmer community, for example, you need to make a decision to whom you sell specific coffees. And the right decision here matters a lot about how much money you make at the end of the harvest year. You need to optimize that. And we have tools to actually assess the data and make these decisions. So these are two examples, basically, that we do here. We also allow them to share information. So when they have an existing relationship that the farmer community can share with a roaster, they exchange information on that. As soon as this is going, you get a feedback channel. And both sides basically benefit from each other. So A, the farmers understand better what the specific customer wants to have. So they pitch the right coffee samples. With the feedback, they enforce that basically. You have a learning loop. And that keeps them together.
Awesome. Andreas, I truly love like the whole idea. I love what you're doing with Cropster. I like drinking coffee as well. Maybe not as much as my wife loves it, but I'm a big fan as well. Especially now, I would say specialty coffee and like different like, more enhanced flavors that I would be into. Generally, I love the concept of like taking you know, like a traditional thing or industry like coffee, and then just like equipping it with technology to make it better, to make it thrive, to make it more fair and more sustainable, and so forth and so on. What's next? What's next for Cropster?
So last year we got Verdane as a big investor on board. That gave us new capabilities. So right now we are working on our own to complete our platform that spans across the whole coffee vertical. There's still some gaps to fill. We are actively working. So the coffee platform. So we do our own stuff. And a big emphasis is also on further acquisitions down the road. We are in talks with other parties. We hope to announce a new deal in the next few months, actually. But the goal is having the platform as soon as possible and launch that globally. And for that, we do what it takes to need to be done very pragmatically.
Amazing. I wish you all the best and good luck with this. It sounds amazing.
Thanks. I might need it. Let's see.
Andreas, this is the time during the podcast that I usually play a little game with my guests.
Alrighty. Yeah.
Rapid fire that I shoot fast questions for you, give me fast answers. Are you up for playing?
Absolutely. All in.
All right. Let's go. Did you get a cup of coffee before? No, we don't have time for that, but amazing. Like actually, I would love to also try some of the coffees that you guys are into someday, by the way.
I send you a bag after that.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, let's do that.
Thank you. Andreas, a roasting myth you'd retire?
That there is a difference between filter and espresso roast.
Okay. It's supposed to be fast answers, so sorry. It is. But I'm actually interested, like, can you expand a bit?
I think these are old categories. Why I mean that? Well, these are old brewing methods, filter brewing, espresso brewing. We try to roast, optimize for one or the other, which I think makes sense. But I think how we brew coffee is also changing a lot now. There's a lot of tech coming up. So you cannot just say there's two categories. I think this is broader. And the thinking about how to really roast to get a good extraction, which is what you want in a nutshell, will change because of that. And the sooner we start to think about it differently, the sooner you will be ready for that.
Nice. Okay, I promise from now on only fast questions, fast answer. But this was nice.
Okay.
Generally interesting. Like, what do you mean? Andreas, feature customers. So one feature customers ask for before they need it.
They asked it before they need it.
They want it before like they actually need it. I don't know. Like there is there a feature?
Yes,
that
I think. Yes, I go back to the to rate of rise. We had some people that played around and it made no sense. We added it, and we did it in a wrong way or in a way that they didn't think it was right. But it suddenly developed all of that features about no defects anymore.
All right, great. Another one. Favorite under the radar, origin or variety?
Under the radar. Holy crap.
Do you have
okay. In Europe, Chinese coffees.
I think I've never
We hardly get any here. It's actually today a big producer, but mostly it's domestic. There is really nice Chinese coffees if you have a chance.
Okay. I'll try. I'll look for it. Nice. One data point that best predicts cup quality.
For me, it's balance. it's a meter value. We capture stuff like body, sweetness, and acidity. Balance means the balance between acidity and sweetness, which I think is the most important for me.
Nice. Sounds good. Like as in coffee, as in life, you know, the balance is
balance is the game.
But the name of the game, exactly. Andrea, most common roastery mistake at scale?
Wow. really? Most common roastery defect on scale. I honestly think it's about focusing too much on coffee because it's so passionate.
Okay.
And look more systemically at the business in return. I think that should be also in balance.
Okay. So we come back to the balance. But on the other hand, you want to focus on the coffee. You know, that's coffee is what you're... like what you're in for, and
all complex systems tend for nerds to be a rabbit hole, and it applies to me in life.
So that's the whole thing. So you have to automate the whole system for the people so they can actually focus on their coffee, you know,
and we need to simplify it so you can focus on that.
Nice. Okay, last one, Andreas. Finish this sentence. Great coffee equals?
My life driver.
Nice. Amazing. Thank you so much. I love it. Andreas, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. I loved this conversation. It was so much fun. I had so much fun and so insightful as well. I think people love it and we'll learn so much about coffee that they actually drink every day. And maybe people don't even know what is it all about. But thank you again. And I hope to meet you sometime in person, whether it's in Austria, maybe for some skiing or Barcelona. Also, you're welcome to Barcelona anytime.
Oh, I'm welcome to Barcelona, by the way.
There you are. Nice. Anyway. So this all the record.
Let's arrange that. Later.
Yeah, that's right. Nice. Amazing.
Oh, you have so good coffee shops in Barcelona as well. Oh, man. Yes. That's really nice. Anyway, thanks for having me. Also, I really enjoyed it.